Nobody wants people in their house. Like, can you get that construction done yesterday? So it's one of those things where it's a very complicated and difficult business. So anything that we can do to organize it or to streamline it dramatically helps. So really a lot of it comes down to two things, SOPs and software.
CEOs often feel stuck in the grind of scaling their business and feel like they're missing out on the best parts of life, like family, friends, or travel. On this podcast, CEOs come to take themselves and their companies to the next level. Let's dive into the Millionaire Mind with your host, Dallin Schultz.
Hey, welcome back to another Millionaire Mind episode where I have some of the most successful business owners sharing what motivates them to get out of bed every morning and how they elevate themselves and their companies to the next level. And today you're going to hear from our guest on how he's been able to integrate processes, technology, and marketing strategies to revolutionize the home remodeling industry. So without further ado, let's get into it. A special welcome to our guest, Jeremy Mayer. Jeremy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be fun. So especially because we're talking real estate, and real estate's my thing, real estate's your thing. So it's going to be a great conversation. But with that being said, to our listeners, what you'll realize at this point, if you've been listening for a while, is it doesn't matter what vehicle our guests have chosen as a business. A lot of the challenges and things that they go through, a lot of the systems, the processes, the technologies, it can really be adapted to whatever industry and field you're in. So awesome. Well, Jeremy, why don't you take a few minutes and just share with our listener a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I'm one of the co-owners. There's three of us that own Phoenix Home Remodeling, and we're based in the Phoenix area and the surrounding cities. And we help people with internal remodeling, so anything that's inside the house. And we have been in business for 8 years now. And the first probably year or two was quite interesting. As anyone who's started a business knows, this is technically my second business. I grew up around self-employment for my parents. And at a previous position, I was coaching and recruiting businesses to help them out with marketing automation. So it was an interesting journey, to say the least, to get to where we are. And obviously, the journey is just right in the middle. But in any case, that's a little bit about what we do.
Awesome. So this business, you've been in for 8 years. You said the first 1 to 2 years was quite interesting. So I definitely want to get into that. But when would you say that this entrepreneur journey really began for you? You said you grew up in a home with the self-employed parents. So it sounds like you were probably around this at a young age.
Yeah, I was around it quite a bit. And that was obviously an impact there. Like, oh, okay, you can kind of set your own schedule. You can have more control over things. I ended up going into sales initially. I liked the idea that I had some control over it. And that was kind of a good segue to learn just certain things. Like, for an easy example, and I hope this doesn't seem offensive, but if I worked a regular 8-to-5 job and I got paid a salary, if I put an extra hour, that probably didn't change my income or not. Where in sales, it's like, if I work harder or work smarter, that gives me the ability to have more income. And so that was part of it. One other thing I would say that had an impact on me wanting to start a business was working at some places that were a little bit larger. They had a lot of red tape and the bureaucracy. And sometimes if you're just a regular employee in the middle or towards the bottom, and you see there's a problem and you voice that opinion, and it goes nowhere, or the person above you agrees, but by the time it gets to whoever makes the decision, nothing gets done. And you see that month after month, year after year of the same problems. I have that mentality. I like to fix things. I don't know where it comes from. I think I was just born with it. But not being able to improve something that is blatantly obvious, not just my opinion, but numerous people see it, that was something that was very frustrating. And after doing that for 20 years, you get to the point where you're like, this is ridiculous. I could do this better. Not to get into it now, but that's actually how we got started in this business, was knowing that I could do this better with help from others.
See, that blows my mind, because as a business owner, I want employees like you that recognize some holes in the system and process, and they're bringing it to our attention so we can improve it. Right. Whether it's a process, product, service, whatever the case is. And at the end of the day, whether you're in business or you're working for somebody else as an employee, you just want to feel valued. You want to feel like you're making an impact. You want to feel like you're making a difference. So I can see how that could be really frustrating for you year after year. And you're just feeling like you're not being heard and you're down in the trenches. This is probably stuff that you're seeing all the time and then trying to escalate it up through all these different layers. It just gets, it gets lost in all the aspects of running a big business. Now, was this in when you were in a sales capacity? This is the experience that you're referring to?
Yeah, most of them. I've been in probably about 10 different industries. I have a tendency to get bored and want to move to something else. Not so much that I'm getting fired or let go or anything like that. It's more just, okay, well, I learned about wholesale lending. Let me learn retail lending. Okay, I've learned that. Let's go to this. And so I like to just learn. But the majority of the issues were probably while I was in a sales role or in a management role, because at one point I decided to become a sales manager to try to help others out and improve their abilities.
So as you reflect back on this, what were one of those challenges that just seemed to scream at you that you recall that you just got so frustrated about that that wasn't changing?
Sure. So I don't want to call out Salesforce, but I don't know how else to explain this without just mentioning the name. So there's certain things that aren't set up in the CRM. And it's like, if we could just do this, then I wouldn't have to do X, Y, and Z. And it's a long story, but the idea is if there's something that's repetitive that we have to do every single day and it could be removed or avoided, why not do that? And if it doesn't cost a lot, but maybe it takes a few hours of time, then who cares? But I think it's tough when you're at the top, so to speak, to see those things that are in the trenches and empathize with that or even just understand what's going on. So at our company, I don't know if I'd call it a policy, but we have kind of this culture that's set up where I don't care what the reason is or what's going on, just tell me what's wrong. And if it's something that you don't like, if you can come up with some type of way to improve it or fix it, maybe that is the right way to do it. Maybe we come up with a different idea. Or even if you can't come up with a solution, at least bring it to us. And the speed is vital, especially with something like marketing automation. We do a lot of stuff with marketing automation. And if something goes wrong, it's usually not just that one client. It could be numerous people. And so the difference between one of my employees telling me within 20 minutes versus a day later, that could be the difference between affecting one person or affecting, I don't know, 20 people. So it's like, not only do we want to hear about the issues, we want to hear about them immediately so we can get a fix very quickly.
I think some people are afraid to bring challenges or problems to the business owner because how it might make them look, how it would reflect on them. But we want to know. We want to know the challenges. I like to believe that there's very few business owners out there that are aware of serious issues and don't want to fix it. Because at the end of the day, their business is an extension of them. Mm-hmm. And they want to have that reputation. They want to have that integrity. So I think building that culture into your current team is huge. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the cool things that you're able to do as a business owner is that you can learn from things that you liked and didn't like in previous lives, previous jobs, and bring it into what you're doing today. And I think having that environment saying, hey, I want to know, let me know so we can fix it, we can address it. We know stuff's going to hit the fan. Mm-hmm. That's just part of business, right? Yeah. But we can't fix it. We can't repair it if we don't know what it is. And as business owners, as entrepreneurs, I think that's where we thrive. We like fixing problems. I don't know why, because it causes a lot of stress, but it's just kind of where we thrive. We get this dopamine hit of facing a challenge and overcoming it. Mm-hmm. So that's incredible that you've been able to work that in with the organization. So tell us a little bit about, well, you said this was your second business, correct? Mm-hmm. So after you did sales, where did your journey take you?
So I ended up starting a credit repair and kind of debt improvement course called Credit Repair Doctor. And it's still technically up. I just don't spend any time on it. It really doesn't do a whole lot because I'm not willing to put in the time, because to market it and to do everything that's needed would be a lot of work. And I don't know that the ROI is there. So it's up, it's there, it makes some sales, but there's nothing really that I'm involved in at that point. And then from that aspect, I did that for about a year. And then at that point, I just kind of let it do what it was doing. And I got a regular job again in sales. And then from that point, I worked at Infusionsoft, where they do marketing automation. And that's actually where I met one of my business partners, Ben. He was the director at Infusionsoft. And I ended up complaining to him, I don't know, probably a dozen times. He probably was getting sick of hearing me complain about these contractors and things getting done in my house. And I didn't have nice things to say. And it shocked me how bad they were. And while I was no expert, I worked at Home Depot for 3 years during college. And I've always been handy. I can do a little bit of plumbing and electrical. To be frank, I don't touch anything in any of our clients' houses. I sit in front of a computer all day. So just to be clear, if anyone's listening to this and I'm saying I know a little bit, I'm not touching anyone's house. And so at that point, I had complained to Ben so much that he said, hey, my brother lives in Illinois. He's a contractor. We've thought about doing this. Do you want to consult with us? And then at that point, once we kind of started to talk through it, it made more sense for the three of us to partner together. And so the reason we ended up getting together was to provide a service that people could depend on and avoid all those common contractor nightmares. Not to say nothing has ever gone wrong in any of our jobs, but, well, without me saying it, another way to say it would be our reviews. If you look at our reviews, we have over 100 five-star reviews. We only have one bad review, and it's from somebody who never even spoke to us. He didn't like the business model that we had and the fact that he had to do a phone consultation first. So he left a one-star review. I replied and said, I'm sorry. And then he bumped it to a 3. So I feel like we got to win there. So
just the energy, right? The energy some people put into their one-star reviews.
Yeah, to each their own. And at least it makes it look more natural, because we've had numerous clients say, you know, I wasn't sure if I believed all your five-star reviews. It just looks unnatural. And a lot of that could be attributed to Ben and Mark, my two business partners. So Ben handles a lot of the project management aspects, even though we already have another project coordinator. And Mark handles a lot of the overview of all of the workers. He does some of the work sometimes himself. And so they essentially handle the two main areas of construction. And so it's very hard for things to slip through the cracks. It also makes it so that if something were to go wrong, they're really good with communication and caring and empathizing with the homeowner and finding solutions quickly. And sometimes we can find a small problem and we don't even have to tell the homeowner, because it's like, let's just fix it. They don't even need to know. We don't need to try to upcharge them. Let's just get it taken care of and keep that customer experience as best as possible.
I think, and I've seen this with people that I know in the construction space, they know construction, but they don't know people. And I think that's unfortunately where a lot of contractors fall short, and it's unfortunate. And it sounds like what you guys have really been able to do is not only take quality construction, but integrate in the communication aspect to it and really provide this five-star experience. So I definitely want to hear more about that. But before we do, you mentioned earlier on that the first 1 to 2 years was interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Share with us a little bit about that. There must have been a reason you chose that word.
Sure. Well, one thing I bring up is a mistake that I made. So we've all heard this a million times. Most books on business that talk about getting started say, like, niche down and pick a specific niche. And so we started in the accessibility and living, like, kind of senior type of niche. And there just isn't enough people. In Arizona, and especially the Phoenix area, obviously there's a lot of retirees, there's snowbirds. So that was kind of the mindset. And I quickly learned that we just need to do kitchen and bathroom and other interior remodels for everyone. I had just gotten too niched down for our own good. So that was one thing that I would bring up. That's one of the bigger mistakes I made that probably cost me about 6 months. I was still working at another place when we first started, so it wasn't too big of a deal. But still, that was one of those good learning lessons, not to niche down too much. So it might be contradicting what some people give advice to. And obviously, every industry is different, and there's so many factors that are involved in there. But that would be one small tip I would provide.
Hold on real quick before you go on. So I think that's awesome advice, because we do hear that all the time. What they say, riches in the niches, right?
Yep.
So looking back now, like, obviously, you're like, okay, that wasn't the right move. Mm-hmm. Now that you've experienced that, is there anything you would have done differently to maybe to prepare, maybe some additional market research? And now, was there anything you would have done differently that you think could have helped you avoid getting 6 months down that road?
I wish. Maybe I haven't beat myself up enough to where I've thought that through enough, but Phoenix is known for having a lot of people that are looking for like aging in place and retiring or already retired. So I feel like the market is there to some extent, and obviously we still help them. The other website I created is still up and we generate business from there. But yeah, I would say there probably isn't any specific thing. And in hindsight, I don't mind it at all because it's a good learning lesson. And I'd much rather have learned that quickly as opposed to now, because we occasionally will meet and talk about like, should we do this or that? If we were to niche down now, that would hinder us. Obviously, we could repair ourselves, so to speak, but I'd rather have it happen in the beginning. And if that is something that whoever's watching this can actually do in the beginning, try things quickly to a certain extent. Obviously, give it enough time to ensure that you're not just making a decision off a small amount of data. But that would be something I would recommend is in the beginning, you do have a little more flexibility as you build up and you have more employees. Making changes aren't difficult, but they do take a little bit more work sometimes.
I think there's a ton of value in your response here that I want to touch on a little bit more. At the end of the day, you took action. And so many times, I feel like business owners, aspiring business owners, and even some active business owners that are still in the process of becoming, they get caught up in this analysis paralysis. They overanalyze and they're trying to gather too much data and they're not just taking action. So in some situations, and I appreciate how you responded to this, in some situations, yeah, you might look back and be like, yeah, we should have done this, this, and this differently, or we should have looked further into this. And then there's other times where you won't know until you just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that's often overlooked is the fact that you did it, and you did it for 6 months. And 6 months, I'd say, is actually a really short period before mm-hmm. you realize you needed to pivot. Mm-hmm. I think most people try to do it 1, 2, 3 years, and then they go out of business, or it just they run out of money, right? In my opinion, 6 months is actually really short. I think 3 to 6 months, if you can pivot in that time frame, then you're mm-hmm. on track. But by doing that, do you feel like you were able to pivot with more confidence into the next area mm-hmm. of business because you knew for certain that that wasn't quite where you needed or should be operating?
Yeah, this may be a tiny example of that. But for example, when you pivot, we needed a new website. And so I learned quite a bit. That wasn't my first website I built, but it was probably the third or fourth. And so at that point, going from one kind of website to another one, that helped out quite a bit with just a few different things where, okay, if we're going to start all over again, I want this, this, and this type of thing within there. So yeah, that definitely helped.
Awesome. Well, what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick commercial break, Jeremy. And when we come back, I want to get into the partnership aspect, because you mentioned how initially it started as like a potential consulting agreement, then you guys decided to get into business together. So I want to talk about how you decided to partner with the people you did, because I know that's a lot of people's concerns when it comes to starting a business. Like, they've heard horror stories of partnerships, people getting sued, things going south. But in my experience, when you find the right partners, a lot of good can happen. So I want to get into your thought process and how you went about vetting your current operator. So we'll talk about that in a few short moments.
Hey, Dallin Schultz here with Rev Equity Group. We just launched an exciting new investment opportunity for those looking to diversify their investments across 1,000+ apartment units in some of the hottest markets in the country. If you are fed up with banks and the stock market and want to invest in hard assets to more effectively grow and preserve your wealth, then click on the link in the show notes for more info, or go to investwithrev.com and schedule a short 15-minute intro call so we can determine if our investment strategy is aligned with your goals. It's time to take your financial future into your own hands. Take action, schedule a call, and find out how my team can serve you. At Rev, we make apartment investing easy.
All right, welcome back to Millionaire Mind. So Jeremy, let's chat a little bit about partnerships. How did you get to the point where you were comfortable and confident moving forward with your current partnership?
Yeah, it's a great question because there's a lot of things that could go right or go wrong with a partnership. So I was lucky enough to already know this person. His name is Ben, and he was my boss. In fact, at one point, he became my boss's boss. And so I had the ability not only to know him for over 4 years, but work with him and have him as my boss. He also knew me the same way, along with I was his employee. So we knew how we worked together. And that's kind of a nice dynamic in either way. Like, yeah, co-workers is one thing, but to have someone manage you or manage someone and know you can get along is big. One thing that also helps out is he has a lot of integrity. We were both in sales and neither of us are like the salesy type. So little things like that obviously start to show themselves over the years. And just the fact that we would hang out occasionally too, like outside of work. So I got to get to know him outside of that environment. And then I met his brother and immediately I could tell both of them were parented similarly. And what I mean by that is they had integrity, they had work ethic. It's a huge generalization, but they're from Illinois, I'm from Michigan, and there's this thing that we joke about occasionally about how people from the Midwest, they just have strong work ethics. Obviously, that's not always true. It's a generalization, but it's a joke that we've made a few times, and we just all clicked. I could tell that none of us, at least from that, the few times that we met before we made it official, I could just tell that none of us were going to try to hurt each other. None of us were greedy. For example, we could all be making more money. Instead, we put it back into the business and our employees. It's just our mindset on where we're at. So I think those are a couple quick little things that helped us out quite a bit. Yeah.
Would you say time was one of the biggest factors here? Mm-hmm. Because it seems like you associated with these people for quite some time before you engaged in that partnership.
Yeah, you know, when you work with someone for over 4 years, especially in an environment where you have the ability to do something that may not be considered ethical in sales, and to see neither of us do that, and just starting to hang out with someone over that much time, it makes it a lot easier. So that would be a recommendation. I mean, I know it kind of seems obvious, but if you meet someone a week later, I probably wouldn't partner with them, figure out a way to get to know them over more time. Maybe that's easier said than done sometimes. But yeah, that was a factor. So I would say the time, getting to work with them, and knowing that their personality type was similar, and that we were never going to be super greedy and try to do something that could impact each other in a negative way.
Did you find that you had clarity on each other's strengths and weaknesses and found that you were able to complement each other pretty well? And if so, how did you come to that conclusion?
Yeah, so that's a great question. That's another benefit of working together. So as odd as it may sound, even though I was in sales, I'm actually not that good with talking and coaching with people, even though I've done it and I've gotten better at it. And maybe if I were to coach someone right now, they'd say, oh, that wasn't bad. Ben is really good at it. And so right off the bat, we knew, okay, Ben, you're going to probably be more involved with leadership and management and things of that nature. My brain goes towards tech, fixing things, processes. I'll document things all day long that are boring that most people don't want to do. I'd rather not do it. And I know that that's not always the best use of my time, but it is something that my brain does pretty well. And so it wasn't hard for us to quickly figure out, okay, these are the things that we're going to do. And one of our first meetings before we even decided if we were going to do this together was, what are each of our main roles? Not to say that those can't change, but what are you responsible for? What am I responsible for? And that way you don't have those issues of like, well, this isn't my job or anything like that. That's another thing that I really like about my business partners is none of us have that, it's not my job. Like, we'll jump in if we need to, or if we can help out, or someone's on vacation, or whatever the reason is. Another one that's going to seem a little odd that I'll bring up, and this might be controversial, but one of the things I really like about Ben and Mark, and I tend to think I have this myself, is not tying things to who we are as a person. And what I mean by that is, and there's nothing wrong with this, I want to be very clear how I'm going to say this, it's going to be done poorly, but I like the Detroit Lions. But if someone says they suck, I'm like, you're right, they do suck. I'm not tying that to my personality. Politics, yes. regardless of what sides, I'm on all sides, just to be clear. But if I'm on one side and I can't hear anything else, even if it's logic or fact, maybe religion could be one of those. There's so many different things where it's like, well, I'm X, and because of that, I use it as my identity, and it becomes very difficult for someone to see past that. And so if it's in business or your relationship or anything, if someone's closed-minded to whatever it is, it's very difficult to make decisions. And so I find that that's not hard for any of us. We aren't tied into anything. This probably won't make any sense, but if Ben were to say, hey, let's put the Detroit Lions on our website. People love the Lions. This makes no sense, right? If I love the Lions, I'd be like, yes, let's do that. I don't know. Or if I hated them, this is a terrible example, but just so I don't get into politics or other things, right?
We're playing in a safe space here.
I don't really care. Regardless of whatever the decision is, my personality isn't tied in. My ego isn't tied into it. So there's been numerous times where all of us have had ideas and they weren't good, or we thought they were good and we tried it and it didn't work, or they were great. There's so many scenarios, and we're all wrong all the time. I'm wrong every day. I just don't care. Like, let's just get on with it. And I think that they have that same mindset. And so that's something that if you're looking for a business partner, I would recommend considering that. I would consider it for a spouse or anything, frankly, anyone I associate myself with that. I don't like to deal with people that are closed-minded. In business partnership, that's like a marriage for life in a way.
100%. And I appreciate you sharing all this, because that's huge. And I think that's something that's often overlooked. It's okay to have different opinions. It's okay to have different views. Now, you want to make sure that the overall alignment and stuff is there as a partnership, which you said you did. But at the end of the day, you're there to work together to serve people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most businesses are there to serve people and to provide an impact in one way or another. And one thing that I found that also really helps people in figuring out partnerships, and you alluded to this in a roundabout way, is finding things that energize you, having clarity on things that energize you and what drain you.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like the sales, more extroverted, management, go out, coaching aspect, sounds like that might be more in line with one of your business partners, and then the SOPs and the processes and that stuff energizes you. Mm-hmm. And so finding those partners that complement each other is huge. But if you don't have clarity for yourself, it's going to be hard to identify what you need in that partner.
Mm-hmm.
I had another thought around, my mind's racing like crazy because I love talking about this stuff, especially partnerships. Will probably come back to me here in a minute. But at the end of the day, like, successful businesses require successful partnerships. Like, I don't know any very, very successful business where it's just done by one person. There is always complementary partners. So gain that clarity. Find that clarity on what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, what energizes you, what drains you, and then find somebody that complements that and get to work. And as long as you share that same vision and you talk about expectations, you said before you guys even partnered up, you sat down and you talked about, okay, what do our roles look like?
Mm-hmm.
That is huge. One of the mistakes I see new business owners make, and I see it a lot in the real estate investment space, people will go to a meetup, they'll go to an event, they'll connect with someone, they hit it off, they connect with them right away, and they decide to launch their real estate investing business. And then a few months goes by and stuff's not getting done. And they realize that even though they were initially attracted to each other as business partners, they had two similar strengths, right? So there was things that weren't getting done that had to get done. And they kept making excuses or deferring it or trying to put it off on the other person, because at the end of the day, there are things that drain you. So find that person that those things that drain you, energize them.
That's great advice. That's so important. Sure. Yep. You could get along with each other, but if you both have the same personality type and you both have the same strengths, that probably means that you have the same weaknesses, and who's going to cover that?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's pivot a little bit more into just the business and the technology side and what you guys are really doing to achieve these 5-star reviews. And that's difficult in the construction and contracting space, because people, they love tearing apart contractors. So share with us, Jeremy, how you guys have really integrated technology and just the user experience to accomplish the level of success that you have.
Absolutely. So we were lucky enough to already work at Infusionsoft. So we had the application for free. And I went over to another department where I would recruit and coach small businesses that were made to help other small businesses. So I got to learn the software quite well. And that helped out quite a bit when you want to transition. So we use that for marketing automation. And probably most people already know what that is, but just in case, it essentially automates certain things that you would normally have to do as a salesperson, admin, whatever the role is. And so that has helped us with being able to ensure nobody slips through the cracks, because that's something that's very common. And to your point with construction, so I've coached other businesses, had another one, grew up around it, and I thought this is going to be easy. And wow, construction is just a whole nother beast. To keep it simple, imagine that there's so many more variables, obviously, than a regular business like a restaurant or something like that. Not to say that that's not difficult to. Every small business is difficult to run. And then what other business do you know that is in someone's house for weeks or not months? If you're building a house, they're not in the house. If you're a plumber, electrician, you're in the house for an hour or two. They don't really care who you are. I mean, they care maybe a little bit. Come in, get things done. I don't know if this happens because I'm not on the other side, but I would imagine, you know, if it's my household, there's an argument, the kids are screaming, the dog's barking, the dog wants to bite someone maybe, I don't know. There's so many things that can go on. And if I'm the homeowner, I'm stressed out. I've got people in my house. I don't care how nice they are or professional they are. That's not fun. Nobody wants people in their house. Like, can you get that construction done yesterday? So it's one of those things where it's a very complicated and difficult business. So anything that we can do to organize it or to streamline it dramatically helps. So really a lot of it comes down to two things, SOPs and software. So the software helps with things not slipping through the cracks. It also helps with the reminders. So one example that I would provide that would be quite beneficial for a lot of people, not just in the construction business, is with marketing automation. It can help manage your consultant, your salesperson. So our salesperson doesn't do any sales, but there is certain things like making sure that they follow up, making sure they receive the proposal, and obviously the normal types of follow up. And so Infusionsoft or any other software that's marketing automation can do those things, and it can remind them to take care of things. So this way, mine and this other individual's relationship are better because I'm not calling them up every day. Did you do this? Did you do this? What about that? Can you get to this? Or whatever it is. I've set it up to where here are my standards. So after X amount of time, I want this to happen. After X amount, and it just creates a task. And what's really great about marketing automation is if, let's say, the task is to, I mentioned follow up with the homeowner after 2 weeks. Well, if the homeowner moves forward, that task never even shows up. So it's not like, oh, I get it, it's another task that's pointless. Every task is useful to that employee. And so they're more likely to want to do it. And then the whole point of this is to make the teammates or employees as good as possible, which then translates to the homeowners or your customer being as happy as possible. So we focus a lot on the employee experience and making them as best as possible. And then that translates to the homeowner being happy.
And what's incredible with this type of software and automation is that the conditions you can set. So like to your point, like if somebody moves forward, that reminder isn't populated because they're moving along that sales pipeline. And you can attach different automations, different workflows, different tasks to depending on what stage these people are in. So it's incredible. We use it in our industry as well for raising capital for real estate. And it's an incredibly powerful tool, because at the end of the day, it's about using your time as effectively and efficiently as you can. We all have the same 24 hours in the day. So why is it that some people, some businesses seem to get so much more done than others? And it's because they learn how to truly manage that time. And there's a lot of tedious things that you can automate. And I think you and I can agree, Jeremy, like at the end of the day, whether you're in construction or real estate investing, it's a people business. There's expectations that are there that you want to exceed, mm-hmm. but it's managing people and emotions. And I mean, to your point, what other business is in somebody's home for weeks or months on end? Like, I never thought of it that way, right? So I don't know, maybe you guys get close enough with your customers that they're like inviting you over for family dinner and stuff by the end of the project. Yeah. But there's these relationships that have to happen, but there's a lot of tedious things that can be automated. And so it's happening all around us, especially with AI being introduced into the business world. Find a way to integrate it into your business, whether it's automation, software, AI, even if it's in a small degree. And I don't think you can 100% automate any of these businesses. But if there's a way that you can integrate a little bit in to save yourself, maybe it's 15 minutes a day, maybe it's 30 minutes a day, and then you start compounding that, you're going to be amazed at how much more you can get done in such a short period.
That's great advice. One thing that I notice when coaching business owners is that they will give the excuse or the reasoning behind, well, that doesn't solve everything. It's like, well, you can't automate everything. And maybe that doesn't save you the 30 minutes you wanted, but if it saves you 15 and you have to do it X amount of times and then multiply by 12 months, et cetera. So that would be something that I would mention. My friend Michael Hurley would always say to people on the phone, do not throw out the baby with the bathwater. And I always thought that was a ridiculous saying. And I think that is really applicable here, because I can't tell you how often I used to hear people give excuses for something just because it didn't solve everything. It's like, that's not really the goal most of the time. It's like, can you just improve it 5% and then another 5%?
Yes.
And the next thing you know, things are running really good. And so that's something that we've had to try to teach our employees is, sometimes it's not perfect, but if you have an idea, don't bring it up because you don't think it solves everything. If we can just tweak it a little bit, or even just use it and it improves a tiny bit, let's go with that. It's better than not doing anything. And so what you're saying, that analysis paralysis, they don't do anything, or they make an excuse or a reason not to do anything.
I couldn't agree more. And this is something that I personally am working through, because I tend to have that personality of like all or nothing, black or white. Like this gray area is hard for my mind and my personality to manage. And so I fall into that, and I'm getting better. Like, if this doesn't solve anything, why would we even waste our time? One of the books that helped me most on this topic is Atomic Habits by James Clear, because he talks about improving 1% over 10 different areas. Mm-hmm. Now you improve 1% over 10 different areas, now you have a 10% improvement.
Yep.
And how these habits compound and they stack up. Mm-hmm. So for those that are listening that are like me and more black or white, and if this doesn't solve everything, just give it up.
Yeah,
I challenge you not to. Like, find that 1% or 2%, that 5% difference, because it will make an impact. And when you can layer that and stack it and compound it, it doesn't happen overnight, but you're going to look back 6 to 12 months and be like, whoa, I just saved myself 10 hours a week because of what I've integrated and what I've built in. And think about that. Like, why do most of us get into business for the first place? It's probably to make money, have control of our life, and get more time back. I mean, we want to make an impact, right? But it also comes down to like time. Mm-hmm. So if you can save 10 hours a week implementing some SOPs, implementing some automation, having a good system, having a good process, what more could you do with that 10 hours a week?
Right.
Maybe it's traveling. Maybe it's spending time with family. Maybe it's reinvesting in the company or spending your time elsewhere. So it's little things like that that I think often get overlooked when it comes to growing and scaling a business. So
yeah, absolutely.
Jeremy, what would you say has been one of the biggest challenges over these last 8 years as you've been growing and scaling Phoenix Home Remodeling?
I would say one would be keeping up with all the technology and adjustments. Another one would be hiring and coaching. That's an area I'm not that good at, so I would say that would be an area. Another one, probably specific to our industry, is just cost. Not to downplay grocery costs, but someone will complain like, hey, bread went from $3 to $4. And it's like, that's not good. And I'm making those numbers up. Yeah, that's obviously not good. And that's something that you have to buy consistently. But what a lot of people don't realize until they see the quote for remodeling is remodeling went up a lot more. Construction costs went up a lot more than the rate of inflation. And so a kitchen that maybe cost $40,000 10 years ago is now probably 80. So it's like it's double. So I would say that's a challenge, is just getting people to understand like this cost isn't coming out of nowhere. In fact, we're the only company I know of in the entire United States that when we give someone an initial proposal, we didn't make that out of Excel or just create something really quick like most of the design build companies that I know of. We actually submit that to our estimator, an in-house estimator. They build it out in our software. They're actually using cost codes and catalog items. Like we take the time to build it out, even though I've been told, I don't even know how many times in all these different groups, that it's terrible, waste of time, et cetera. But I want to make sure that if I'm going to give someone a proposal, it's not just made up and then we'll fix it later on. So anyways, we build all that out there. And that is a big challenge for a homeowner where, let's say I'm the homeowner, I want to redo my kitchen and I'm guessing 50 to 60 because I read an article that was 3 years ago and probably was even on the low side to begin with, or was from another state where costs are lower, whatever the factor is, or just the kitchen wasn't to the level that our homeowner wants. And then we come back and our competitors come back with, I don't know, 70,000. That's not an easy thing to swallow for anyone. That's a lot of money. So that would probably be one of the areas that I'm noticing more lately that is a little bit more of a challenge. But at the same time, there's nothing that we can do directly to control that. That just is what it is. It's not like, okay, let's implement a piece of software and that fixes our issue.
Right. So the cost you can't control, but expectations and the relationships you can. So what have you guys implemented and done to be able to effectively manage these new expectations?
Yeah. So we're one of only three companies I know of in this huge remodeling group. It's like thousands of people that have a cost calculator. And we're the only one that doesn't ask for an email or some type of lead thing with it, which isn't bad. But we just implemented cost calculators for kitchens and bathrooms on our website. So someone can go on there and just get an idea. We have more emails that now explain a little bit more about what has gone on over the last few years. Our consultant has been coached on that. He has message templates too, depending on what people say. So that way he doesn't have to keep retyping the same things. So he just copies and pastes it and then makes it specific to them. So essentially anything that we could think of to educate, expectations, coaching, and automation, we've tried to implement where we can.
Awesome. Incredible stuff. Man, Jeremy, this is a great conversation. It really was today. I feel like we talked about a lot of gold, a lot of good things, partnerships, automation, technology, customer experience, managing expectations. That's probably, in my opinion, one of the hardest things with any business, just managing expectations of partners, employees, customers, mm-hmm. or clients. There's a lot to it. So what's next? What's next for Phoenix Home Remodeling? Any big goals in the future? Any targets that you guys are trying to hit?
Yeah, I would say one is probably around revenue. Besides that, my goal for next year, so we're just a little over 100 reviews, is to get to 200 reviews. Besides that, it's more of scaling at a level that does not impact the homeowner experience. I'd say those are probably some of the larger goals.
Awesome. Good stuff. Well, it's going to be fun to just keep in touch and follow your guys' journey over this next week or so. So if you're in the Phoenix area and you're listening to this and you're considering home remodeling, definitely check out Jeremy and his team over there at Phoenix Home Remodeling. And Jeremy, as we wrap this up, there's four questions I like to ask every guest at the end of every show. And the first one being is, what is one absolute book recommendation for those looking to scale and further develop their millionaire mind?
I would say Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. We kind of touched on a few things there. That would be one of the books.
Buy Back Your Time. Awesome. What has been one of your favorite quotes that you've embodied and lived by?
5% of life is what happens to you. 95% is how you react to it. I don't know who did that quote. I tried looking it up probably a decade ago to try to remember who it is. And anytime I've ever strayed away from that quote, like I'll forget about it. Every time I've done that, I notice that I get a little more frustrated easier, or just a little bit more. I have an intense personality, and so that quote has always helped with that.
There's a lot of people that are still trying to figure that piece out. I think once they do, they'll realize how much more they'll be able to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Jeremy, if there was one thing you could share with fellow business owners that are beginning or simply trying to get to that next level, what would it be?
Always look at small ways to step back, regardless of if you're a solopreneur and you're on your own, or if you have a large company with many teammates or employees. Always be looking for those ways to step back. So the second book I would recommend, that I'm sure others have recommended on here, is The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. That one and Buy Back Your Time are both very similar. E-Myth is good for anyone, especially just getting started. Buy Back Your Time might be more towards someone who has at least a couple employees.
Taking some time to take a step back is huge, and it's very, very difficult for business owners because we tend to be very futuristic thinking. We're always looking at what's coming, what's next, what do we have to do? This is my thoughts, my opinion, my experience. There's times where you have to put your head down and you have to grind. Mm-hmm. But if you don't pick up and take a look around and reassess, you might get much further down that path than you intended to. In your situation that you shared earlier, you got 6 months in. And that's probably because you were finding small ways to take a step back, pick up, reassess, and realize, hey, we got to try something different here. So solid advice. Awesome. Well, Jeremy, how can our listeners learn more about you and Phoenix Home Remodeling?
Sure. Yeah, they could visit our website. It's phxhomeremodeling.com. And it doesn't matter if they live in our area or any other state. We have advice to help out in every way possible. That was one of my goals, was regardless if we work together with someone, I didn't want people to go through the issues that I did. So our website has, in the menu to the right, it says advice, and there's a drop down, and there's just a bunch of different information that can help people out, like what questions to ask, how to avoid the common contractor nightmares, bathroom remodel tips, kitchen remodel tips, and a dozen other things, plus a blog. So if anyone's considering remodeling, regardless of where they live, there's a lot of good information in there that might save many hours and stress and probably money too, potentially.
Awesome. Sounds like you got some incredible calculators on there too. So if people just want to go on and get an idea mm-hmm. of what a project might cost, they could check that out as well. So Absolutely. Awesome. So that's phxhomeremodeling.com. So look, this has been an incredible conversation with Jeremy. And if this is your first time listening, I'm glad that you tuned in. People have been asking me what my company does. So since I have you here listening to my show, I'll share that with you now. So my company partners with busy professionals just like Jeremy that are looking to experience significant tax savings, have more to invest, and even reinvest their hard-earned capital. And we work with other successful business owners like you by offering them opportunities to invest alongside us in large apartment deals. If you've been frustrated with the stock market, want to grow capital in something you can actually touch and see, and invest in one of the most recession-resilient asset classes, then you can find out how I could serve you by visiting investwithrev.com. It can be overwhelming vetting the right investment and the right operator, but at Rev, we make real estate investing easy. Jeremy, again, thank you so much for coming on and just sharing your experience and how you've really been able to revolutionize this industry and being in this contracting space and really being able to provide high quality experience and services for your clients. So really appreciate you coming on and sharing your journey.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
And to our listener, remember, you can't have a $1 million dream with a minimum wage work ethic. So go out there and earn your win for today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Hope you got value from this episode of The Millionaire Mind, a journey into the mindset of successful business owners. If you want to get results, you've got to take the right steps to get there. Dallin hosts a free weekly educational webinar focused on teaching you how to start investing in apartments so you too can experience the benefits of real estate ownership without doing any of the heavy lifting. There you can gain insights, connect with others like you, and ask Dallin all your burning questions about how you can start owning apartments today. Go to themillionairemind.us. That link is in the show notes.